I hope you're back. I think we'll then proceed if Mr. Bird, William Bird, are you and your colleague ready to proceed?
Hello, good afternoon. Yes, indeed, we are.
Your colleague's name is?
Advocate Ben Wings.
Okay. Now, let me take this opportunity as well to welcome you to this meeting. And thank you for your written submission as well as the fact that you've agreed to come and make an oral submission to the committee. We'll give you 15 minutes and we'll questions of clarity to have. And we would prefer that you stick to what your issues are with the ball and what your recommendations are. Over to yourself, Mr. Bird.
Thank you very much, and thank you to the committee for this opportunity. So I'm William Bird. I'm the Director of Media Monitoring Africa. We are an NGO that has been running since 1993. Part of our work has been making submissions to parliaments, to various other bodies, including other Chapter 9 institutions, the African Human Rights Commission, ICASA, and more regularly to Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Communications. And one of the issues that we've been working on over the years has been the issue of hate speech, dealing with hate speech online. We currently have an agreement with the South African Human Rights Commission to help them combat hate speech online and mitigate its awful impacts. I'm going to now introduce Advocate Ben Wings, who is a hate speech specialist. He has been working with us on our submissions. And I'm going to ask him if he would be so kind as to highlight the key points that we have made. He has been fully briefed on the request to keep it short and sharp. Thank you. Over to you, Ben.
Thank you very much, William, and good afternoon to the Chair and the Honourable Members. Thanks very much for giving us the opportunity to make these submissions. You would have seen from our written submissions that the essential issues with the bill that MMA has concerns about are around the hate speech chapter rather than the hate crimes chapter. There are some recommendations made there, but we'll focus these submissions on the hate speech chapter. Now, the main concern that MMA has is that the current formulation of the crime of hate speech is one that will probably invite a constitutional challenge, and the constitutional challenge will probably be successful in light of certain aspects of the Guelane judgment and some international law. Now, before I go into why, I'm just going to preface what we say by emphasizing that MMA does believe there is a need to prohibit, deter, and punish extreme hate speech, the kind of hate speech that's described in the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the constitution of our country as a speech that advocates hatred on grounds of group identity, which constitutes incitement to cause harm. So it's where speech becomes incitement to cause harm based on prohibited grounds that criminal law ought to step in and prohibit, deter, punish, rehabilitate. Short of incitement, you then get into the realm where, as the members will know, then you're outside the 16.2 exception to the right to freedom of expression in the Constitution, and then Parliament needs to justify every limitation it imposes on free speech beyond that, beyond incitement based on prohibited grounds, incitement to harm. So the every step that Parliament takes into that realm of non-insightful speech is one that has to be justified carefully and balanced against the right to freedom of expression. Now, obviously, the interests to be served are the interests of equality and dignity, which are profoundly important interests, which the Constitution not only empowers but enjoins Parliament to protect and promote. The question then is whether there are less restrictive means which would make it disproportionate to criminalize certain forms of speech. Now, the way the bill currently defines criminal hate speech is essentially in the same way as the Equality Act provides for the civil prohibition or delict of hate speech. So it's criminalizing essentially something that's already prohibited in civil law. Now, there's in principle, when you're dealing with other crimes, there's not necessarily something wrong with that. So assault gives rise to a civil delict, a civil cause of action for damages, etc. But it's also a crime. And the same goes for a wrongful death, which can be murder or culpable homicide. But in international law, what the African Union and the United Nations Committee on Human Rights and several African courts have held is that where you're dealing with free speech, it is more vulnerable to a chilling effect than, for example, the freedom to wield fists and firearms. Where you're dealing with speech, you have to be a lot more careful about imposing criminal as opposed to civil prohibitions. So what's been held in the context of criminal defamation is that where there is a civil delict of defamation, it is excessive and therefore unconstitutional and disproportionate and therefore unconstitutional to criminalize the same thing that's already the subject of a civil prohibition. And that's because of the unique chilling effect on free speech. And the practical concern that MMA has is that, and one can see examples of this in the way that even the civil prohibition is approached, is that when a criminal prohibition is created, it places a potent weapon in the hands of agents against transformation, agents against racial justice, gender justice, to use that criminal prohibition against activists for change. So you will have, for example, and you have activists for racial justice who may use very confrontational terms about white people. There was an artist, for example, that had an installation which used the phrase, "F white people," numerous times, that was taken to the Equality Court, and ultimately they were successful, not the complainant, but the artist was successful in a very well-reasoned judgment in the Cape Town Equality Court. But if there was a criminal prohibition, you would have had this person subjected to a police investigation, fingerprinting, potentially prosecution, and even imprisonment for essentially expressing a frustration with white supremacy, with confronting white supremacy. And the same could go for people confronting patriarchy and homophobia and xenophobia, that they could then be subjected to criminal investigation and prosecution for essentially activities which are equality promoting rather than equality retarding. And that's the risk when you criminalize something as opposed to having it under an equality law statute where it has civil liability. The next concern that we have is that the current definition appears to extend the prohibition into private communications. Now, the Constitutional Court in the Kwailane case was fairly lucid about why this shouldn't be the case, and the Constitutional Court cautioned that even the civil prohibition should not be subject to a prohibition on, even a civil prohibition shouldn't extend to private communications. So what the Constitutional said was that hate speech prohibitions, even those that attach civil liability, should not extend to private communications because that would be incongruent with the very purpose of regulating hate speech. That public hateful expression undermines the target group's dignity, social standing, and assurance against exclusion, hostility, discrimination, and violence. Now, in the couple of minutes remaining, we should obviously say something helpful rather than just telling you what's wrong. What could perhaps be a recommendation or a remedy to the concern that we have. and that is to replicate the language of Section 16.2c of the Constitution, which is advocacy of hatred on only four protected grounds are mentioned there, but it should be extended to all of the protected grounds mentioned in the Act, including albinism, HIV status, and disability, etc., sexual orientation, so that advocacy of hatred based on any of the prohibited grounds, which constitutes incitement to cause harm, should be an offence. That both of those elements must be there. But the current prohibition in the bill goes far beyond that. It will therefore need to pass the limitations test. We don't believe it will pass the limitations test because there are less restrictive measures available and already in place, and it's therefore excessive. You would have seen in our submission, we've also referred to other areas of criminal law that overlap with hate speech, especially the Films and Publications Act, which comprehensively criminalizes hate speech. Now, the constitutionality of that provision is a little suspect, but the point is that it's excessive to criminalize something that's already dealt with in various other laws. The other, I think I have 1 minute left before questions. The other possible suggestion to ameliorate any concerns that you have is that crimen injuria is already a crime. It's the crime of seriously injuring someone's dignity or privacy. And many hate speech cases have also been prosecuted as crimen injuria cases. So the hate crime chapter would already cover hate speech in that case, because crimen injuria on the basis or motivated by prohibited grounds, motivated by prejudice on prohibited grounds, would then be hateful crimen injuria. It would be the hate crime of crimen injuria. Under the hate crimes chapter. So that would solve the problem. So one option is to take out the hate speech chapter altogether. That's perhaps an unrealistic one. The other one is to narrow the hate speech prohibition to the language of Section 16.2c of the Constitution. I hope that's helpful, and we're very happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Advocate Winks and Mr. Baird, for your presentation. Our members, do you have any questions for clarity? Mikolaki?
Thank you. Oh, sorry, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Winks. My question is just with regards to the definition. We heard yesterday from some of the stakeholders saying that hate is a concept that cannot be defined in law. Would you agree with that? And if not, what would you suggest would be an appropriate definition for hate? Because currently that element of the crime is not defined, and it is quite worrying for obvious reasons. Then the second question I have is that Professor Madonsela, I think on the first day, said that in her view, harm should be defined as broadly as possible, and then it should be left to the courts to flesh it out. What would your opinion be? Would you agree with her, or if you disagree with her, what would your arguments be for saying that it should not be as widely defined as possible? I don't agree with her, but I would like to hear what your reasons are if you disagree with her. Also, another interesting argument that we heard, which I would like your opinion on, is that if you exempt those who adhere to certain religious views in terms of the clause 4.2 of the bill as it currently is, then it's unconstitutional on the basis that you afford a right to religious groups that you would not afford to non-believers. So the religious are exempt from certain forms of hate crimes and hate speech, which is a right that you are not affording to those who don't adhere to it. I thought it was a very interesting argument, that on that basis, that exemption is unconstitutional. And because I found it such an interesting argument, I would like to also, perhaps I know it's not part of your submissions, but I would like to hear your views. Can it be argued that you cannot allow such a submission or such an exemption only to persons who adhere to some form of religion? And then finally, I just would like to hear your views on the 8 years maximum sentence for first offence. It started in the National Assembly initially as 3 years, as introduced by the department, and then it was increased to 8 years. We heard yesterday that in terms of other legislation, it is 2 years in some instances in some existing laws, and I would very much like to hear what you think if the bill would pass in its current form or with minor amendments, what you would think would be reasonable and the reasons for saying that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nicolakis. Any other member? If not, just to add to what the question that you've been asked, you say that you monitor hate speech online and you mitigate in terms of its impact. But can maybe just speak to us in terms of how do you determine that it's hate speech online? What framework, legal framework or anything that you're using? I want more of the details on that. Thank you. Over to yourself, Advocate Wink.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I'll just answer Honourable Michalakis's questions and then the more practical question that you've posed, Chair. I think Mr. Bird will be more well-placed to speak about the actual mechanisms that MMA uses to identify and report hate speech. So the first question, the submission was made that hate can't be defined. I don't agree because the Constitutional Court defined it. In Kwelane, many paragraphs are devoted to defining what is hatred, and the Constitutional Court takes a great deal of information, in particular from the Canadian jurisprudence, where hatred is defined as extreme ill will, detestation, and vilification. And then the Constitutional Court in Kwelane then applied those concepts to the article that had been published by the late John Kwelane, and found that it met those descriptions. It's impossible to define every term to exhaustion to cover every possible thing that might be hateful or might not be hateful. We do have to, respectfully, I think Parliament does have to trust the citizens and the courts to interpret laws reasonably. And the term hatred, I think, is capable of legal definition. In international law, there's books that have been written about it. And I think it's more a philosophical question of, you know, what is hate, rather than a legal question, because in the law, we do have definitions for it. The equality courts have been applying it for years without a great deal of difficulty. The more difficult question is usually determining what the objective meaning of a particular thing is, rather than, once you've determined the meaning, whether that meaning is hateful. If it degrades people's human dignity and equality, then it's hateful. That's my sort of shorthand definition, and I think the Constitutional Court authorities are fairly consistent with that. But Kwelane is the place to look for the definition. Harm ought to be defined widely. I think that the Constitutional Court, and also in international law, the position's been taken that harm shouldn't be restricted to physical violence. The clue for that is in Section 16.2 of the Constitution itself, because Section 16.2b speaks about free speech not extending to incitement of imminent violence, and then C is about incitement or advocacy of hatred that constitutes an incitement to cause harm. So there's a distinction there between harm and violence, violence being obviously a broader concept. And the Constitutional Court held that harm should extend to C, serious emotional and psychological harm. So you would have the, obviously, the de minimis rule that the law doesn't concern itself with trivialities. So if it's a trifling degree of harm that, you know, people are being oversensitive and a reasonable person wouldn't feel harmed, then that's, of course, covered by the existing framework of the definition in the Equality Act that, you know, a reasonable person would find it to be harmful. So I wouldn't take it any further than that it does extend beyond physical harm to serious emotional and psychological harm. I don't think it's necessary to try and define it in any more detail than that. As for the religious exemption, it, as you say, it falls outside MMA's scope, and William will correct me if I step out of line, but I personally don't like the exemption. I do think it does, it's potentially discriminatory. I understand why it's been included. It's been included because otherwise the Bible could be criminal hate speech, among other religious texts. I'd have to give a lot more careful consideration before I offered a view on whether it's necessarily unconstitutional, but I do think there is a risk that it's discriminatory, whether it's a justifiable discrimination based on the extent and depth of belief in the country. That's probably something Parliament would be given some latitude to consider. It's definitely an issue that needs to be considered. Then the maximum sentence, I think 8 years is manifestly excessive. In comparative countries, you see usually something like 2 years. In Europe, you do get quite serious sentences in some cases for Holocaust denial, and that's obviously because, and for promoting Nazism or other fascist organizations. That's obviously because of their history. But I think lessons have been learned since then about the unique chilling effect on speech of these heavy sentences. So I'd implore you to look at the case of Lone Issa Konate, that's K-O-N-A-T-E, versus Burkina Faso in the African Court of Human and People's Rights. I think it was in 2014 or 2015 the case was decided, where they referred to a number of international authorities and found that excessive custodial sentences are generally not necessary to combat harmful speech, and that non-custodial sentences like fines or other forms of rehabilitation should rather be ordered. I think that, I mean, they do say that for extreme hate speech, different considerations may apply, but I think as a general proposition, speech being something that you know, doesn't endanger necessarily people physically, I think unless it rises to an incitement of violence, I think you're on dangerous territory imposing custodial sentences. William, sorry about the chair's question.
Thanks. I completely agree with those answers. So in terms of practically what we do, so we run a platform called Rule 411, which is a public complaints platform. We built it for the elections in 2019, and in fact it'll be running again, and it's been running since then. And we added hate speech as an additional online harm because it was originally looking at mis and disinformation. And the way that we deal with it is that we use the criteria that were defined by the Concord to determine whether or not something constitutes hate speech. So we will look at that and see if, in our view, and the view of three reviewers and then a member of the secretariat, they believe that that is hate speech. It then gets sent to the South African Human Rights Commission for them to determine whether or not they wish to then launch an investigation or do whatever other action the South African Human Rights Commission sees fit to act on in that regard. But in essence, in practical terms, the criteria are set out, and I'll send through a link to Gershwin just after this to the platform, and I'll include a screen grab of where we show the precise criteria that are used in assessing it. It is, we've got a very high threshold, and we think appropriately so, what we tend to find is that very often you'll find speech contains elements of hate speech, so they may be particularly offensive and vile, but they may not constitute incitements, for example, directly. So they, we're finding elements where they are, they meet certain criteria, but not as common, not as commonly that they are actually overtly hate speech. And the reason we're using that definition is because it's in line with our constitutional court ruling, as opposed to the definitions on the social media platforms, which are, which vary very significantly from platform to platform. I hope that answers your question. Thanks for the opportunity again. Over.
Are you online?
I think we're done. Thanks,
Sava. If you don't mind, let me just follow up with the chairperson.
Yes, I see the next speaker is ready. So thanks very much to the committee and members for that opportunity. Over.
Yes, thank you very much for your time and your questions.
Thank you very much.
Good day, Mr. Rosenthal. The chairperson is just experiencing some technical difficulties. She'll be back in a minute or so.
Okay, so can you hear me now?
Yes, chairperson.
Okay, so apologies for that. I'm not even sure at what point I actually got taken off the platform, but if advocate rings and Mr. Brad is still around, let me just once again thank you very much for your responses and for your presentation.
You're most welcome.
Okay, Mr. Rosenthal, I see you are on the platform. Okay, Mr. Rosenthal.
Can I proceed?
Okay, no, I was just verifying if you're actually on the platform.
Yes,
let me just, okay, yeah, apologies. From the Association of Christian Media, Mr. Roosevelt. Let me take this opportunity to welcome you and thank you for the input that you've made on the hate crime based speech bill, as well as accepting the to come and make a presentation to the committee. We'll be giving you 15 minutes. And thereafter members would ask you questions for clarity, we would prefer it if you could tell me on what your issues are with Bill, as well as what your recommendations are. Over to Mr. Rosenthal.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to start off just in terms of what I would like to frame as the priority of this bill and the need to deliberate specifically on each of these alternatives and to give due time to that. Then I'm going to give some case examples of people who recently and currently are facing unjust hate speech charges and why we don't want this these kinds of things to happen further in South Africa, and even more seriously with the risk of an 8-year jail sentence. And then I'm going to outline some alternatives that can be used to improve this bill if the committee is not willing to scrap it. First prize would be to scrap this bill because I don't see a need for it, but otherwise we'd outline about 20 small changes in text which could reduce the risk of innocent people going to jail or alternatively being made afraid to express their views in the public arena. And then I would also like to rebut a collection of motivations that the Department of Justice has put forward in favor of this bill, all of which I think are flawed and inaccurate and misleading. Just to start off with my request, that there is due time allowed for deliberation, and that members make use of that opportunity to deliberate on each of those alternatives and participate in that. This is the most complicated bill that I personally have ever seen, and it's also a game changer because it potentially can change the expression of political and religious opinions in this country, which then impacts on the actual democracy and all other laws in this country. And so I will go now to a slide presentation with some of these case examples. Firstly, just to introduce, the Association of Christian Media has 70 members that are all involved in either broadcasting or print media in this country, and has been participating in many similar concerns to this bill previously. To give examples of innocent people accused of hate speech, we have firstly a feminist who in the United Kingdom, which I think that the Deputy Minister of Justice framed as a good country, who put up this billboard saying a woman is an adult human female. She was then interrogated by the police and intimidated for several hours. There was also a clash between her organization and a group of trans activists who were biological males, saying that they were female, who argued that this was hate speech. The second example is from Durban. Simeon Chetty is an evangelist who was preaching in the street and arguing why his experience of Jesus was greater than the Hindu gods. This greatly offended certain Hindus who were listening to him, and also listened to a video clip on social media of what he said, and they then made civil hate speech charges against him, wanted R1 million financial damages for his comparison. This put enormous stress on him, and in my opinion, that type of action, although it was settled out of court, is with no damages paid, puts enormous stress, and that stress would be much greater if this was a threat of jail for 8 years. The next example is the former Minister of Police in Finland, who is currently on trial for criminal hate speech charges for posting exactly what I put on the screen here. Her name is Pavi Rantanen, and she was on trial this week. Her sentence will be heard next week, which is actually on appeal because the state was not happy with the outcome of the lower court saying that she was innocent. Now, this puts enormous stress on her. She's actually the leader of a political party in Finland, and to me that is completely unacceptable. That chills the religious and political debate. Another example was a satire, a comedy, which was recently banned on Twitter. There's a politician in America who is biological male posing as a female. The satire group put him as Man of the Year, and that was then judged as hate speech and locked out. Now, all of this would be so much more serious, as is, for example, the Finnish example. I can also give examples. The Prime Minister of Pakistan, former Prime Minister Imran Khan, is currently facing criminal hate speech charges. And I think that the members must be careful not to think just this only applies to other people. It could also apply to you one day in future. To now go to the bill itself, the most complex an important part of the bill is essentially the flow from the grounds to the definition of harm to the offense to the exemptions, and then a clause which essentially gives exemption from the exemptions, and as it's worded at the moment, makes the exemptions fairly meaningless and, in fact, in my view, just smoke and mirrors. So I really would like to explain what is a very major flaw with this exemption from the exemptions, in which it is pretending to give protection to religious media and artistic and scientific speech, but it doesn't actually. The question, this table breaks down the different categories of what could be penalized versus not penalized. Now, one's got a supposed exemption from these religious, scientific, artistic, and media criteria, but then at the end of it, it says that does not cause incitement to cause harm. Now, that sounds pretty reasonable if you interpret that harm as physical harm, because we actually don't want to protect anybody from inciting physical harm against other people. It's not necessary, but neither do we want to protect people, because there's already other laws that do that. The problem is that harm in this bill is defined very, very broadly, including social, psychological, emotional harm, and economic harm, which can be interpreted to oppose boycotts. And I think that boycotts are an important part of our civil society. So the part that's in yellow is the part that we have a major problem with, which is the exemption from the exemption then takes away the protection if there's an incitement or an alleged incitement towards psychological or social harm that is so the problem there is that if somebody is campaigning for a political or religious cause and the two can opinion, somebody else can say, well, your opinion is causing social harm. And then they can say, well, by campaigning for that opinion, you are inciting other people to do something. For example, if you're campaigning against same-sex marriage or for some cause to say, well, males should only be allowed to go into male bathrooms and females only into female bathrooms, somebody can say, well, that's causing me social harm. So that then can allow this to trigger the thing, and the entire protection of the bill becomes meaningless. So please be aware of that danger. I think that the a major proposal that we have put forward to improve this bill, which has already been considered by the National Assembly, but to my happiness, it was voted through, and many of the people who voted it through were not present at the deliberations to listen to the reasons why this was this needed to be changed. So firstly, in the offense of hate speech, remove the words be harmful and just have incite harm. That is in 4.1a. Then in the exemption clause, and this is this exemption from the exemptions problem, is that you change that exemption from the exemptions to only physical harm, so that these other things such as social or psychological harm do not then nullify the exemptions. That's just inserting one word there and deleting two words from 4.1a. Then one can also add in, to strengthen it, in Section 4.2, by a religious organization in public or in private. That is because some people may interpret this bill and are likely to say, well, this is only to protect actual evangelism and actual preaching in a church. Now, I don't think that's adequate. I think people who have a religious opinion should be entitled to discuss that in the public arena, on social media, on the radio, in the street or the newspaper or wherever they want to. So that would fix that. Then the penalties clause needs to be drastically reduced. You've got in Canada the example of 2 years. Now this is 8 years. The arguments I've outlined in our submission, the reasons why that was proposed in the National Assembly, and the reasons are all flawed. You can see those there. Then in terms of the definition of harm, please to delete this term, vague term, social harm, which nobody actually knows what it means, and the word economic harm, because the word economic harm can then stop boycotts. And I think everybody will agree that boycotts are an important part of our consumer and our political history. So in terms of the grounds, to narrow the grounds, I think, as some of the previous speakers have repeated, to those that are in the Bill of Rights and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which is really where our Bill of Rights gets that from, those are internationally tested. The longer the list, the more the risk of problems. But of those rights, the most problematic is this one, gender expression, because that allows somebody, for example, a biological male, to say, well, on Tuesday I identify as a female, on Wednesday I identify as a male. It is a completely flexible and undefined term, and that can put people's safety at risk, and the privacy of spaces and the participation of sports. Then there are a number of proposals that we put forward which could be used to panel beat the definitions in this bill into something which would be less likely to cause problems. Disagree with the previous speaker in terms of the need to define hatred. I think that we can borrow the good parts of the Qulani judgment to put it into a definition which we have proposed here. This bill will be administrated mostly by a magistrate's court who is not going to have the time to go into all of the constitutional court judgments. We want to make this simple so that there can be justice. And we've put forward a proposal there. At the end of our submission in a table, one can also define, promote, propagate, or advocate. We can define the public interest, as the Film and Publications Bill does. We can define social detriment, although I prefer the deletion of the word social. We can narrow the definition of harm, preferably to remove psychological and all these other things, but if one is going to keep the psychological harm, to make it as strong as possible so that it is gross psychological harm, preferably, or deep, which was the word used in Qulani. I don't accept the argument that we must just default to Qulani. Qulani was a civil case, and it's also a prime example of an actual unjust judgment where the court did not make a finding that was logically consistent with its own reasoning to the particular facts of the case. So we want to make this simple because people get emotive when there are hate speech cases, and we want to reduce the risk of innocent people going to jail, which could be you and me, or being chilled from expressing their viewpoint. Then the regulations, I would request that they be, one, put a qualification that they put out for 30 days for public comment, and that the holiday period is not counted in the reckoning of days. That would substantially reduce the risk of problems there. Sorry, is there...
Are you done?
Yes, well, I'm happy to carry on talking, but I've done my 15 minutes, so with respect, unless I have permission to carry on, then I have to ask your permission, but I'd love to carry on.
Okay,
thank you. I would also just like to address the question raised by Mr. Michalakis with respect to the exemption for religious groups. I would disagree with the answer of the previous speaker. I think that the exemption for religious reasons is part of the separation of church and state. It's a part of Western culture and historic law for the last about 400 years, and parallels the importance of the protection of the media and science. One can consider broadening the protection for other people, but I don't think we can consider narrowing the protection for people who are motivated in grounds of conscience. We've got a long history of people going to jail for expressing their religious viewpoints over hundreds of years, and that is essentially what shaped our constitutional democracy, was the need to protect those freedoms. The first person who proposed the idea of freedom of speech, his name was Pastor Hellways. He spent the rest of his life in the Tower of London under James I. We don't want to go back there. And so I think that's it's critically important to keep that. Then in terms of these claims that this is motivated by international law, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights has only three grounds. It doesn't say we must criminalize it. We've already fulfilled our obligations there. The South African Parliament has not ratified this this covenant. Also, this rebut plan of action on hate speech, this bill does not fill or comply with those requirements. The European guideline policy documents, which are not international law, this has been selectively quoted by the Department of Justice. It does not fit with these European guidelines, which also give balancing requirements. The claim that this is required by the Bill of Rights is false, and I think is the criminal law is going to require much higher standard than the civil law under the Equality Act. Further than that, this claim that it's required in terms of this covenant on combating racism, that is one select ground which is not controversial. It's this which is already unprotected in the Bill of Rights. What we are concerned about is this collection of other rights, which is likely to that's been added to the grounds, which is likely to lead to more conflict. Then further, if one looks at the statistics of the actual countries which the Department of Justice has itself used in its motivation documents, the homicide statistics did not come down as a consequence of hate speech laws. In some countries, they actually went up, or alternatively, they were part of a long-term downward trend over a long period, and no change is shown by the institution of the law. The one thing which has happened in these countries is the chilling effect, that people are then afraid to express their opinions on controversial issues, and that affects the freedom of the media, it affects the freedom of religion, and it benefits the most aggressive activist groups who continually lodge charges against other people, saying that they, who have a different view than saying that that is hate speech. So I would argue that all of these are flawed, and we put more detail in the submission on all of those questions. And so I would ask, first prize, don't pass this bill. Second prize, to make these changes which would reduce the risk of innocent people going to jail. So I've used my 20 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rosenthal. My apologies. I seem to be having net problems yesterday and today, but yeah. I see you've also ventured into some questions that members would have probably asked. But let me allow members to ask you questions first. Are there any questions that honourable members would like to ask? I think Mr. Rosenthal actually ventured into that aspect as well. But yeah, honourable members? Okay, I don't see any hands. Can you hear me, Mr. Rosenthal?
Yes, I can, yeah.
Oh, you can, great. Okay, I'm just worried. All right, no, it's fine. I think you ventured into some of the issues members would have probably asked questions about. So I think members are fairly well covered. But let me take this opportunity to thank you for your input and for your presentation. Thank you very much. I think our session with you is actually done. Thank you, Mr. Rosenthal.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. I will make an additional written submission to further answer that question of why the religious exemption of 4.2 is necessary.
Oh, yes, you mentioned that. Please do. Can we get it before today's Thursday, before close of business the next Thursday? Okay, we're giving people a week. All right? Okay, thank you, Mr. Rosenthal.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, members, we'll then move on to the next presentation, which is from Lita Labantu. Krishan, are they on the platform?
Yes, Chairperson.
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay, once again, welcome. We lost you on the Tuesday meeting. Please continue with your presentation. I don't know what was going on with your network from that day.
Okay, thank you very much. With your permission, I'll also just take off my video so that I don't experience any further problems with my internet.
No, please continue.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair, and all the members of the committee and other distinguished guests on the platform. A little bit about Elita Labantu. My name is Nasai Chakafawa. I'm a legal advisor at Elita Labantu. I am based in the Policy and Advocacy Department. Elita Labantu was established in 1989, and it is a social justice community organization based in Gugulethu Township, Cape Town, and our focus is on addressing violence against women, children, vulnerable groups, and supporting those affected by it. We find the resolve and strength to comment on this bill because of the scope of our work that is centered around meeting the needs of communities that are affected by high levels of violence in the form of domestic violence and gender-based violence. As we all know, gender-based violence has crippled our communities, and we have seen now over the years the plight faced by women, children, and the vulnerable, and I also include the elderly, the LGBT communities, in the form of abuse, even secondary victimization, and the trauma that is suffered is ever increasing. And we also acknowledge that the prevalence of violence is not a uniquely South African problem, but we also welcome every attempt to rectify where there has been failure to properly implement strategies in addressing this violence in our society. The organization is in general is in favor of the bill because we do believe that it aligns with the broader arguments that support limiting hate speech, addresses intolerance over the diversity in South Africa. The organization's support is based on the commitment to fundamental human rights, equality, justice, and the provisions of the bill to protect individuals from hate speech based on various grounds, including gender, race, sexual orientation, and religion. We also want to see a culture of respect of diversity and inclusion for all the people who live in South Africa, and we are certain that the bill purports to align human rights obligations with global efforts to combat hate speech and all forms of discrimination. We also take note that hate speech affects marginalized and vulnerable communities and would like to see the protection of these rights and well-being of these groups. We are only going maybe to address the concerns we put in the written submission, based on the overall intentions of Section 7 and Section 9, which deal with the national instructions and directives, as well as the prevention of the hate crimes and hate speech, Section 9. On national instructions and directives, we welcome the coordination and the collaboration among the South African Police Services, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and the NPA to align efforts to work together on issuing instructions and directives that will ensure clarity and consistency in the implementation of the hate crimes and hate speech laws, policies, and procedures so that there is consistency. We, however, have to submit that in terms of training that is to be done with SAPS, with the NPA, and sometimes with the DOJ, there's often lack of compliance and accountability, seeing that these departments may be under-resourced. we have non-profit organizations, stakeholders, who are able to give training because of their experience in the space, perhaps because of the work with different communities. We would like to submit that these stakeholders be instrumental in terms of also providing the much-needed training and sensitization to these departments. Many NPOs, also include ourselves, Elisa Labandu, often conduct educational programs and awareness campaigns. And through these initiatives, we are able and we are qualified to advocate and counteract the divisive nature of hate speech crimes. The ability of NPOs to collaborate means we are vital partners to the government in contributing to the achievement of the purposes of this bill. In terms of the of Section 9, which is the prevention of hate crimes and hate speech, we note and welcome these provisions, especially the commission given to the South African Human Rights Commission, the Commission for Gender Equality, and the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious, and Linguistic Communities. We have to submit that we do see no effort to bring on board the Department of Basic Education to promote awareness, seeing that the Department of Basic Education is responsible and has a mandate to oversee primary and secondary quality education in the country. The Department of Basic Education is instrumental in shaping the educational landscape and therefore plays a very crucial role, we believe. Incorporating hate speech crimes into the curriculum, we believe, will be a proactive measure to address societal issues and will promote a more inclusive society, knowing that South Africa also has a literacy crisis, and the general population, that is, those not seeking further education or even higher education, after leaving school, will not pay attention to any other forms of learning. We believe it is therefore important that basic education empowers the next generation to be well-informed and committed to upholding democratic values of human rights, equality, promotion of tolerance, and respect for diversity. We therefore believe that the Department of Basic Education must be roped in to develop the national curriculum, promoting the objectives of this bill so that there is improvement in the quality of awareness that must be achieved. And we believe that this will provide a foundational understanding of the legal framework for hate speech crimes, which will also then promote deterrence. In conclusion, Chair, Elisa Labandu supports the bill because we believe it is going to strike a balance between freedom of expression and the protection of vulnerable individuals and communities. I thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Honourable members, do you have any questions for clarity? I think the presentation was quite specific to certain clauses in the vote. Is any member who has a question for clarity? Honourable Vidal?
Yes, sir. Just a straightforward one. I follow these organizations. The presenter said, when were they founded?
In 1989.
Correct. And are you a coalition or you are just a body? Yes, in that sense.
We are a non-profit organization that offers psychosocial support and legal services to all the survivors of violence.
No, it's okay. I'm satisfied. The presenter was very clear and eloquent. Honorable Chair, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Dodogu. I think, ma'am, that was just one question to you from the Honorable Member, but thanks for responding to that. And thank you for making your presentation to us. Like I said, you were quite specific on specific clauses. Thank you, ma'am. Okay. Members, Gershon, we've exhausted the schedule, right?
We have Bertin Corsi online, Chair, from the Council of Charismatic Churches.
Oh, yes. All right. Bertin Corsi, are you online?
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Okay. Let me just take this opportunity also to welcome you. Honorable members, perhaps I didn't explain this bit to members, but I think it was yesterday or so that Mr. Nkosi came back to us to say that he would want to make that presentation. So, Mr. Nkosi, I'm sure you're part of this process, as I've indicated to other presenters, that we'll be giving you 15 minutes, and if you could please try and focus on your on your proposals of the bill and the recommendations.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you to the committee for the opportunity they have afforded us as Council of Charismatic Churches to make an oral presentation to this important piece of legislation that is proposed. Yeah, then in the interest of time, I will just, because you have the presentation with you, yeah, so I'll just zoom into especially key areas that are of concern for us, you know, as a body that represents 1.3 thousand, you know, leaders. And then after following, you know, what that voting session at National Assembly, a lot of what was happening there was so concerning. And some of the points I've highlighted in the introduction, but what is of concern is issues like weaponization. You know, we see, you know, as this body that represents the both Pentecostal Charismatic Churches, that this legislation has an element of weaponization. We see it as a weapon that is designed against pastors, and I have a reason why I say that. We also stated in the document, because when we were following the session at Parliament, you know, we had a presentation by Honorable Maseko Jele and Honorable Deputy Minister Jeffries, who said two statements that are concerning. And, you know, if I quote Honorable Jele, this is what she said on that day when a vote was done at National Assembly, that we are making sure that the preachers must stay on the line. When you preach the gospel, stop talking things that will be insulting to people. That was so concerning. And the concern was, what exactly does she mean? And secondly, what does she mean by stay on the line? And what does she mean of the gospel and talking things that will insult people, of which is something that we still need accountability on that statement as, you know, church leaders. Yeah, because we are asking ourselves, you know, in terms of competence and so on. So we see that said to us, this thing, it seems like it's directed at us. It's being weaponized. And the other thing that, you know, Deputy Minister highlighted in that session at the National Assembly was saying, you say you preach love, you know, there are organizations like so and so, but you have issues with, you know, people, especially of the LGBTQI community and things like that. Those are some of the things on the aspect of weaponization that we have hinted and we are concerned about. We still need clarity on that thing. And it's unfortunate that even the National Assembly, we just wish we had that opportunity to even tackle that on that day. Unfortunately, we were not present at the time. And the other thing was the issue of definition of ways. You know, I mean, the battle for the definition of ways, like your harm and so on, it was a struggle. I had to watch a 7-hour, you know, alongside my colleagues, you know, of that session of the Twelani case, you know, both the justices at the Constitutional Court and even, you know, the advocates that were presenting there, they were battling. And now and then, when they were trying to define the word harm, and hate speech. They were defaulting in their, you know, understanding. They were always defaulting to hate crime, which is something that is so clear. And then, so not even the Constitutional Court, you know, could come up with a clear-cut definition as to what is the difference between hate crime and hate speech. You know, they would use words hate speech, but as they define, they defaulted to the definition of hate crime. And something also during that parliamentary session on the voting of this bill at the National Assembly was that, you know, one of the two of the honorable members, both from the EFF, you know, and, you know, from the ACCP, Honorable Swart and Honorable Yako, they hinted something regarding definition. So that says to us, now, both the Constitutional Court as well as Parliament itself, members of Parliament, could not define what hate speech is in a clear-cut difference to say what this is. But it's unfortunate that, right, it was voted through because it was voted through, but still questionable. But we are just happy that at least with this committee, we are able to add these issues. The other thing that we have highlighted, we see a duplication of legislation and violation of the Constitution because we see a repetition of legislation, especially of your Section 10(1) of Equality Act, which is the FUDA, and as well as Section 16(2) of the Constitution, which already make provision for hate speech and the grounds thereof. And, you know, the issue of the Dwelani case says, now, on the issue of hate speech, if it was an issue, like in dealing with this bill, if dealing with this bill is an issue, then that would say that case would have not been resolved. For the fact that it was resolved and there was a judgment that was passed by the Constitutional Court on that issue of that case, it says there are legal instruments to handle the issue of hate speech. And on the issue of proposed penalty, you know, it cannot be, you know, like appropriate for a pure hate speech offense to bear the same weight of hate crime. If hate crime and hate speech, hate crime and hate speech are differently defined, you know, by this proposed bill, then why need, you know, why definitions need to be clearly cut between the two? I mean, to minimize confusion. So issues like that, if hate crime and hate speech are the same thing, because you can't say, you can't judge the same two different things and apply same sentences to that. That it's you know, it's a question mark. And so to carry that penalty is really questionable. And on issues of recommendations, we just propose, you know, to the committee to convene a consultation session with the media sector, because something that we have witnessed, not only in Parliament, but as well as the judiciary and the executive, the three tier of government, is the issue of, you know, education. Our judiciary, our Parliament and executive, they are not that, you know, competent or understanding the sector. And it's been in different situations and cases where that we pick up, as I've highlighted, what the Deputy Minister said. When I listen to that, him saying that, it says he does not understand what the sector is all about. It's based on assumptions or maybe something of old past knowledge, as well as Honorable Jelle on that matter. So there's a need and a gap for education of both Parliament, you know, the executive and the judiciary on matters, you know, that affects the religious sector. And I've followed, you know, the conversations since, you know, Tuesday, And it's unfortunate that I don't see the CRL, you know, making oral submissions. It would be good to have had them as well, because as custodians of our sector, you know, within, you know, that the constitutional mandate they have, I wish they were also, you know, here to input on this and educate some more on the sector. And again, the issue of this consultation will be helpful, you know, for Parliament to be educated on religion or on religious matters, so that when issues that are around religious matters are tackled, then it could be, you know, from that point of understanding. I see a lot, even in other Parliament sessions, on other issues, you know, ample time is spent on dealing with that, but I haven't, you know, had a situation where Parliament really deliberate fully on the matters. And lastly, as a recommendation, you know, the total scrapping of this bill, we see it as unnecessary, because the laws that are present, you know, they are available. And I think as the last thing to say, some things are based on assumptions, especially within the sector. I have two people who are my friends from the LGBTQ AI community, and we differ, you know, based on my beliefs, you know, in terms of their position and so on. But I don't have a phobia. I relate with them, we caucus, we joke, we have wonderful moments. They know we disagree on that position based on the belief, but that does not constitute that I'm homophobic. You know, with like homophobic, I feel like they are being thrown around, because you disagree with the position, therefore you are labeled and you are called names on the grounds of that. You know, as to the issue of, I mean, love, you can love a person you are different with. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ngozi, for your presentation. Honourable members, do you have any questions for clarity? Okay, I think Mr. Ngozi, we do have your written submission. I should also indicate that we do have the written submission of CRL as well. In as much as you've done oral submissions, the written submissions still stand in terms of what we've received as well. But let me take this opportunity to thank you very much for making your presentation to the committee. And I think our session with you, I think, is now. It's now done. Thank you very much, Mr. Nkosi.
I appreciate it. And the members of the committee.
Okay, Honourable Members, I think we question to confirm we're done with the schedule.
No, that's correct, Chairperson.
Okay. All right. No, Honourable Members, yeah, we've come to the end of quite a lengthy and thorough process over the past 3 days. In terms of the hearings on the hate crime-based speech bill. Let me thank each and every organization and or individual who made a presentation to the committee. But let me also thank committee members for their engagement on the submissions that were made. Let me thank the department and the legal advisors for their attention to the submissions that have been made. I think the submissions has brought forth points for the department to note and to respond to in the next meeting of the committee, which we will communicate with members in due course. I think that being said, Honourable Members, let me thank you again and declare this meeting closed. Okay, I hope I was audible.
Thank you, Chair. Bye.
Thank you.